Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. Today we're going way back in time to explore the story of ancient Israel and Edom.
Oh yeah, this one's gonna be good.
Yeah, it's a story full of all the good stuff, you know, sibling rivalry,
betrayal, land grabs,
definitely land grabs. Oh, and of course, a message of hope and restoration. Can't forget that. So to guide us through this historical drama, we'll be looking at excerpts from Dr. Leslie Allen's lecture on the book of Ezekiel, specifically chapters 35 and 36.
You know, it's amazing how even after thousands of years, these stories still resonate with us today. And you're right, this isn't just any rivalry. We're talking about a feud that goes all the way back to the patriarchs, you know, Jacob and Esau, twin brothers.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a family feud for the ages.
Right. Their conflict, it's even recounted in the book of Genesis. So to understand the story of Israel and Edom, we really have to go back to the very beginning.
So let's set the stage. Dr. Allen refers to Edom as Israel's frenemy next door. What was their relationship like before things really went south?
Well, you know, sharing a border and a common ancestor didn't exactly make for a peaceful coexistence. There were constant power struggles, skirmishes over territory, you name it. They were always vying for control and resources.
Got it. So already a tense situation. And then we add the Babylonian Empire into the mix, a major power looking to expand their reach.
Exactly. And this is where things get really interesting. In 587 BC, Babylon sets its sights on Judah, the southern kingdom of Israel. Now, initially, Edom joins forces with other nations to resist the Babylonian invasion. But then
they saw an opportunity.
Yeah, you could say that they realized that Babylon was likely to win and they wanted to be on the winning side.
They switched sides.
Exactly. They betrayed their former allies and sided with Babylon, essentially sealing Judah's fate.
Wow. What were they thinking? Didn't they realize there might be consequences for such a blatant betrayal?
Well, you know, in the short term, they probably thought they were making a smart move. They saw a chance to benefit from Judah's downfall, maybe grab some land, weaken a rival, and, you know, get in good with the new superpower on the block. It's interesting, though, Psalm 137 paints a vivid picture of their gloating, describing them cheering for Jerusalem's destruction, even chanting, tear it down, tear it down.
That's brutal. So how does Ezekiel address this betrayal?
Well, Ezekiel 35 is a collection of pronouncements against Edom, each one a powerful indictment of their actions. And this phrase, you shall know that I am the Lord, is repeated throughout these pronouncements, and it really emphasizes that God is not indifferent to Edom's actions. There will be consequences.
It sounds like Edom was playing a dangerous game, trying to manipulate the situation for their own benefit. But this idea of reaping what you sow, as Dr. Allen calls it, it really resonates even today, doesn't it? We see this play out on a personal and societal level all the time.
Absolutely. It speaks to a universal principle of justice and accountability. You know, our choices have consequences. And those consequences can ripple out in ways we may not anticipate. Edom's actions are a smart example of this principle in action. They chose short-term gain over loyalty and justice, and ultimately they faced the consequences of those choices.
Yeah, this concept of ancient enmity that Dr. Allen mentioned, it really comes to life in Edom's actions. They didn't just watch Judah fall. They actively exploited the situation.
Right. They saw Judah's vulnerability as an opportunity to expand their own territory, and they occupied Judah's southern lands, basically adding insult to injury.
So not just opportunists, but pretty aggressive ones at that.
Oh, their ambition went even further. They actually aimed to take over the former northern kingdom of Israel as well, which had fallen to the Assyrians centuries earlier.
Wow, they really weren't folding back. What's interesting is that Dr. Allen points out how this land grab had lasting historical consequences. He mentions Herod the Great, a later king of Judea, being of Edomian descent.
That's a fascinating point. It really shows how the ripple effects of Edom's actions played out on the political landscape for centuries. I mean, imagine the irony. A descendant of Edom who once celebrated Jerusalem's destruction ends up ruling over Judea. It really makes you think about the unintended consequences of our actions and how they can shape history in ways we never could have foreseen.
So we've seen how Edom exploited Judah's weakness for their own gain. But what about Judah, or rather the Israelites who were exiled? What does Ezekiel say about their future?
That's where Ezekiel 36 comes in. And it offers a very different perspective. It shifts the focus from Edom's judgment to a message of hope and restoration for Israel.
That sounds like a welcome change after all this talk of betrayal and destruction. But before we dive into that, let's take a quick pause to let our listeners process what we've covered so far. All right. So we've seen Edom's downfall and the devastating consequences of their actions. But now we're turning our attention to Israel and their future, Ezekiel 36. It seems to offer a glimmer of hope amidst all the devastation. What's the tone of this chapter?
It's really a powerful shift from judgment to restoration. Ezekiel 36 directly addresses the Israelites in exile, and it offers words of comfort and a promise of return. But it's not just about going back to the physical land. It's about a deeper spiritual renewal.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not simply a geographical relocation, but something more profound.
Exactly. Dr. Allen highlights how verses 16 through 21 address the Israelites' past unfaithfulness and how that led to their exile. You know, it's a reminder that actions have consequences, and their exile is a direct result of straying from God's covenant.
So a consequence of their actions, but not abandonment.
Precisely. It's like a parent disciplining a child, not out of anger, but out of love and a desire for their growth. God's making it clear that even in their exile, he hasn't forgotten them.
Dr. Allen then moves on to verses 22 through 28, where God outlines his plan for Israel's spiritual transformation. It seems that returning to the land is conditional on some inner work, so to speak. What does that entail?
This is where we see the concept of a new heart and a new spirit come into play. God promises to replace their heart of stone, a heart hardened by sin and disobedience, with a heart of flesh, a heart that is receptive to his guidance and filled with his spirit.
So it's about aligning their inner lives with God's will, becoming people who reflect his character and values.
You got it. This transformation isn't just about outward behavior. It's about a deep internal change that will shape their relationship with God and their actions in the world.
And how does this inner transformation connect to the restoration of the land?
It's crucial. Remember, this isn't just about giving the Israelites back their territory. It's about restoring them as a people who can live in harmony with God, with each other, and with the land itself. Their spiritual transformation is key to ensuring that the cycle of sin and destruction doesn't repeat itself.
So a sustainable restoration, one that addresses the root of the problem.
Exactly. It's about creating a new foundation for their relationship with God and with the land. And this theme of transformation continues in verses 29 through 36, where God speaks of cleansing them from their impurities and empowering them to live according to his statutes.
This cleansing and empowerment, is it something they expected to achieve on their own?
Not at all. God promises to send his spirit to dwell within them, to guide and strengthen them, to live a life of obedience. It's a powerful reminder that true transformation isn't a matter of willpower, but a result of God's grace working in and through us.
A partnership of sorts, then.
Absolutely. God provides the power, but the Israelites have a role to play in responding to that grace and allowing it to shape their lives. It's a beautiful picture of how God works in us, transforming us from the inside out and empowering us to live lives that are pleasing to him.
So far, we've focused on the spiritual aspect of restoration, but Ezekiel also speaks about the physical renewal of the land itself, right?
He certainly does. Verses 33 through 36 paint a vivid picture of a land transformed. Desolate cities will be repopulated, ruined places rebuilt, and wastelands becoming fruitful fields. It's a vision of complete and utter restoration, a land flowing with milk and honey once more.
It's almost like a parallel restoration, both for the people and the land itself, each reflecting the other's renewal. But how is all of this perceived by the surrounding nations? Do they simply watch from the sidelines?
That's a great question. And Dr. Allen makes a point of highlighting this in verses 37 and 38. He suggests that the nations will witness Israel's restoration and recognize that it's not by their own strength or cleverness.
So a divine intervention. A display of God's power that can't be denied.
Precisely. Their restoration becomes a testament to God's faithfulness to his promises and his power to redeem even in seemingly hopeless situations. It's not just about Israel's comeback. It's about showcasing God's glory to the entire world.
It's a powerful message that even in the darkest of times, even after devastating loss and exile, God can bring forth new life and restoration. And not just for one nation, but for all who turn to him.
It truly is. And this theme of restoration, as Dr. Allen points out, isn't limited to ancient Israel. It has implications for us today, offering a message of hope and renewal that transcends time and circumstance.
This is already giving me a lot to think about, but before we get ahead of ourselves, let's pause here for a moment. We've covered a lot of ground in Ezekiel 36. We've moved from the Israelites' responsibility for their exile to God's promise of spiritual renewal and the breathtaking vision of the land's restoration, culminating in a display of divine power that will be witnessed by all the nations.
You've summarized it beautifully, and this sets the stage for a fascinating exploration of how these ancient promises of restoration resonate with our own lives and experiences today.
We've journeyed through this whole dramatic story of Edom and Israel. You know, we've witnessed the consequences of betrayal and then this promise of restoration. But as you mentioned, this story, it isn't confined to ancient history. It speaks to something deeper, something that resonates with us even today. So what are some of those timeless themes that stand out to you?
You know, what really strikes me is how relatable these experiences are, even across thousands of years. This yearning for belonging, the sting of betrayal, the hope for a fresh start. These are universal human experiences that transcend time and culture. And Ezekiel's message, it offers this powerful lens through which we can view those experiences, you know, framing them within this larger story of redemption and renewal.
It's almost as if we're seeing ourselves reflected in these ancient narratives, finding echoes of our own struggles and aspirations in their journeys.
Exactly. And I think one of the key takeaways here is that choices have consequences. Just as Edom faced judgment for their actions, we too are accountable for the choices we make.
So there's this sense of responsibility woven into this story, a reminder that our actions have ripple effects impacting not only ourselves, but those around us.
Absolutely. But there's also this profound message of hope and grace. Just as God offered restoration to a broken and exiled Israel, he extends that same grace and mercy to us today. No matter how far we've strayed, no matter how much we've messed up, there's always a path back to reconciliation and renewal.
It's a powerful reminder that we're not defined by our past mistakes, that there's always this possibility for transformation and growth.
And that process of restoration, it often involves confronting our past, acknowledging the pain we may have caused, and seeking forgiveness and healing. It's not always easy, but it's essential for true transformation to take place.
So it's not simply about being let off the hook. It's about doing the internal work necessary to become more aligned with God's will and character.
Precisely. And as we embark on that journey of inner transformation, we become participants in God's larger story of redemption, not just for ourselves, but for the world around us.
That's a pretty profound thought. So how can we practically apply these ancient lessons to our modern lives? What does it actually look like to participate in this story of restoration, to be agents of healing and renewal in a world that often feels so fractured and broken?
One way is to cultivate empathy and compassion, especially towards those who have been marginalized or hurt. Just as God understood and shared Israel's pain, we're called to extend that same empathy to those who are suffering around us.
So it's about moving beyond judgment and seeking to understand, to see the world through the lens of love and compassion.
Exactly. It's about recognizing our shared humanity, seeking to heal divisions and build bridges of understanding and reconciliation.
Those are some powerful and challenging calls to action, especially in a world that often feels so polarized and divided.
It's definitely a challenge, but it's not impossible. Remember, God's power is at work in the world, bringing forth restoration and renewal, even in the most unlikely of places. And we can choose to be part of that transformative work by choosing compassion over judgment, forgiveness, over bitterness, hope, over despair.
Those are powerful words to live by. As we wrap up this deep dive into the story of Edom and Israel, what's the one takeaway you hope our listeners will carry with them?
I hope they'll remember this no matter how bleak things may seem, no matter how much brokenness we see in the world or even in our own lives. God's story of restoration is still unfolding, and we have this incredible privilege of participating in that story, becoming agents of healing, hope, and transformation in a world that desperately needs it.
It's a beautiful and inspiring message. It leaves me feeling both challenged and empowered. Thank you so much for guiding us through this deep dive.
It's been my pleasure.
And to our listeners, we leave you with this final thought. What does restoration look like in your own life? Where do you see the need for healing, renewal, and reconciliation? And how can you be a catalyst for positive change, bringing God's love and hope into the world around you? Until next time, keep diving deep.